fixtures are out. Pre-season is set to start this week. It's beginning to feel a lot like a new season for Norwich City, and hopefully with that comes a lot more positivity to discuss, although we're going to be talking about a certain Finnish striker to start the show, and then we'll obviously speak about the fixtures that came out last week and end on, obviously, Norwich City starting their 2022-23 campaign unofficially at Aldous Park against Dereham Town this week. I'm Connor Southall, joined by Paddy Dowitt and Samuel Seaman for this week's Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, the podcast that is happy to be at the level it's at and firmly believes that if we can stay there in the next 12 months, then we've done a very decent job. Boys, thank you very much for joining me. Pad, what's your summer been like? I think you've been off for a couple of weeks, I think, since we've done the last pod at least. So what have you been up to? What's it look like? Have you enjoyed a little bit of a summer holiday?
A little one in the middle of household chores. We won't go into that because that's a podcast in its own right, but involved skips and various moving things into the skips. Wouldn't quite say that was feet up drinking pina coladas on the beach, but no work as in paid employment, so that was nice chance to reflect on another grueling season. You can hear the violins in the background for people who get paid to watch football, but it is quite tough when you've done the amount of miles we end up doing, plus a few diversions down the A11, A47. That's another podcast in its own right. But of course, I think the second of the 2 weeks was the fixtures coming back out. So now we know where we are. And I've worked it out. It's about 9,100 miles. And that's without any playoff games, which who knows? You definitely need a bit of downtime. Now I'm looking forward to it. That Dereham Friday night. We'll get into that in due course on this pod. But I know it's a ridiculously quick turnaround, but the sooner the better, because we're all trying to, whether you're fans, media, anybody connected with Norwich City, we're all trying to forget last season and how it tailed off and all the frustration and angst that it induced. So for me, the sooner we can turn the page and move on, the better for all concerned. So I think I definitely needed a little bit of time off, and the house is now looking like a palace. So, bring it on. Bring on 22-23. Same for you, boys.
Yeah, I think I'm ready for it now. I think you have that period where, certainly after last season, it was probably needed a little bit of a break from it all. Obviously, that doesn't really work for us in practice because we have to still produce content every day to fill a newspaper. But you do get a little bit of a break from, as you say, travelling and attending games. And that respite, I think, was much needed. Sam, I'll come across to you. How's your summer been? What's it looked like? What have you been up to? I think a lot of it for you probably would have been around a move, right? That's probably fair to say. So that's chaotic and maybe hectic in itself. So probably not the break that you needed after a little bit of a, well, you got the end of it, but as a fan, you got the entirety. So a tough season anyway.
Yeah, it's been extremely exciting searching for a flat to stay in Norwich. It's definitely kept me busy. And thankfully, sort of last couple of weeks, it's ramped up a little bit in terms of the sort of content we've had to do. But yeah, I mean, as you said, it's probably mentally more than anything due a break after watching that sort of car crash last season. But I think I was probably ready to start going back to games maybe a bit sooner than the rest of you were, given that you had to do the whole cycle for much, much longer than me last season. So now I'm looking forward to it. I think Aldous Park might be slightly different to some of the grounds we sampled towards the end of last season, but I'm still looking forward to it, a sort of different type of atmosphere, and I'm sure a lot of Norwich fans are looking forward to it. I think that this is the best thing about pre-season, really, is you can't really lose. I mean, even if they go and lose 2-0 to Dereham, it doesn't really matter, and we've all got back into the swing of getting to watch Norwich City, so I'm looking forward to it. Thankfully, the flat search looks like it's coming to an end before long, so that's good news.
Good stuff. Well, you're not going to be going to deadline day, which is the main thing, hopefully. With Sam looking for a flat in Norwich, obviously the talk is about whether Teemu Pukki will be looking for a flat outside Norwich come the end of the summer. We're recording this on Tuesday is today, and quotes have emerged from Timo Pukki's agent speaking about his client's future, Timo Pukki's future, obviously beyond this transfer window. There's been lots of speculation around that. We've put it to Timo Pukki on a few occasions and he's been somewhat non-committal beyond saying that he'd be back for Norwich at the start of pre-season. That's been repeated by his agent as well, with perhaps a little bit more colour around how Timo Pukki wants to play at a higher level. We're going to bring you a chat with the journalist who broke this story a little bit later on in the show. We're going to have a little bit of chat about it first. But Pad, this is probably the news that we expected, albeit probably the news that Norwich City fans and everyone associated with Norwich City probably wouldn't want to hear, because it involves the fact that a striker who's scored 11 goals and the bulk of Norwich City's goals last season in the Premier League is at least contemplating the idea of potentially leaving the club this summer. Now, we're going to wrap a lot of context and a lot of our understanding into this chat as well, but as an initial kind of, I suppose, light on the dashboard, it's one that Norwich City fans wouldn't want to have seen at this stage of the transfer window.
No, but I mean, we've done various chats, even in this relatively abbreviated off-season, where we have discussed the various scenarios. So, you know, it isn't a huge surprise, but troubling nonetheless, because the reasons you state, you know, the primary objective for Norwich under Dean Smith is to get back out of that championship as soon as possible, and ideally this coming season, and their chances improve dramatically slash decline dramatically if Timo Pukki isn't part of the equation. So there's so many factors involved in that and how it will play out from here. But fundamentally, Timo Pukki at 32 years of age, off the back of another season when he's in double figures in the Premier League, wanting to stay in the Premier League, that's hardly a newsflash, is it? Why wouldn't he? Because, you know, his time at the top level isn't particularly long now. And how many more seasons could he get? And could he maintain the levels he showed in the previous two Premier League seasons? So, yeah, I mean, we'll get into a little bit more depth about the conversation we had with the journalist who's spoken to Timu's agent, Timo Turunen. But it's very clear that driving this isn't any financial consideration. It's purely the footballing dimension of Timo Pukki wanting to play at the highest level possible and clearly believing, and I don't think there's too many who would disagree with him, that he's good enough to play at the highest level. And that highest level, as we understand it, is the Premier League. There is interest from abroad, as in mainland Europe, but that isn't really where he's looking at. He wants to be in the Premier League and playing for a Premier League club. So that's where we're working outwards from, and whether he'll get that wish or whether he won't, what it does do is inject more uncertainty into the whole build-up now. We're talking about Dearham being the opening pre-season friendly. You could really do without, if you're Dean Smith and Stuart Webber, the backdrop of this, allied to all the other bits and pieces that go with the transfer window and the overhang that the season's well underway before the window closes. That really doesn't aid the process of hitting the ground running, winning games of football and turning the page conclusively on last season. But I fear this could run and run because, you know, if that is the desire that's been expressed from Timo through his agent to Norwich City, which we understand it is, then I don't think it ends here. I think it's very much clearly now out there, and the Premier League interest that is already there may smoke out even a little bit more. So I think there's going to have to be some, sadly, more of these type of stories, and Norwich fans are going to have to brace for a level of uncertainty which isn't helpful or conducive to putting the foundations in place to come back at the first attempt.
No, so what I'll do is I'll read the quotes in full because I think they're quite interesting, but also we can then wrap around a lot of context around it. So this is what Timo Pukki's agent Timo Turunen said to MTV Sports in Finland. I won't even try the Finnish pronunciation of sports because that won't end up well for anyone. But he said, it's not the optimal situation that the club is in the championship. That's clear. Negotiations are going on all the time. It is then a different matter whether it leads to anything. However, Timo is the kind of player that every player should be, that as long as there is a contract, their own business is done with honour. The starting point is that Timo will go back to Norwich for a training session, but if something happens before the end of August, I don't know. Yes, Timo has a desire to play at as high a level as possible. He then went on to add, the problem is that Timo is too valuable a player for Norwich and that he's 32 years old. This equation is difficult to solve. The player is too valuable for the current club, and the player from the Premier League is too expensive for the alternative club. If you think about what has been acquired in Norwich in recent years, their money has been burnt there as well. You don't get cheap a man with more than 10 or 20 goals, as Timu has been for the past few years. The other side of this is what Timu represents to the club. He's a star player for fans, sponsors and the entire community. This creates a rather big value that an individual player creates for the club. Everything has its price in football, but at the moment, the price tag of this equation may only be too high for the other party, who would be ready for the player in their rank. So that, I think the last or second half of those quotes are really interesting, because that, Sam, indicates that there is an understanding from Timu's side and Timu's representative side that any deal this summer may be difficult to strike. And particularly with what we said, that if that pool is narrow, which as we understand, he'd be looking at certainly the Premier League, possibly La Liga, but beyond that, it would probably be difficult to entice Timu Pukki away from Norwich City this summer for any other European club. So that you've narrowed your club there, your pool down there, sorry, to 20 clubs. You can then discount the very, very top elite clubs who will be looking at different markets. So you're then narrowing that down further. That's a very limited pool of clubs initially. You then bring in his contractual situation, his age as well, the price that those clubs will be looking to play. And there is probably some realism on his behalf, and his agent's behalf, that a move would probably be difficult to strike because of his value to Norwich City, possibly outweighing what his value would be to a buying club.
Yeah, and that's the problem, really. I think if Pukki was 25, there probably wouldn't be too much of a discussion to be had, because, you know, if he was 25, he'd be worth 30 million, and Norwich would back themselves to reinvest that in the Championship, probably across a number of players. They'd hope to do that a little bit better than they did last summer. But the fact is, with his age and contractual status, you're not really looking at much more than 10 million, and that's as an absolute maximum. So I think that's where things get slightly complicated, and that's probably where Norwich fans who are hopeful they can hold on to Timu Pukki are probably looking for a little bit of comfort, because you're not going to see those sorts of crazy offers that Norwich, you know, can't possibly turn down. And I think, you know, just from scanning sort of social media and canvassing opinion on what Norwich fans think of this, I saw a lot of wishing him well and saying, you know, you can't really begrudge him a move. And I would understand that rationale maybe slightly more if it was a sort of Buendia situation where, you know, they got £33 million from Aston Villa and that's what he was worth. And that was a good amount of money to Norwich at that time. Whereas with Pukki, if he leaves, yes, you couldn't begrudge him it to a certain extent because of what he's given to this football club. But what they'd be getting in return would be absolutely nowhere near what they have in terms of Timu Pukki and the value that he brings to that Norwich team. You know, you're looking at, let's say, 8 million, which I think probably would be around the amount that might even be towards the upper end of what they would be able to get for him. And I don't think you can sign a striker that's even close to a guarantee to score the number of Championship goals that you know for sure that Timu Pukki is going to score next season with that amount of money. And that's what makes it difficult for Norwich, really. And that's what means they would lose all round, at least with the Buendia deal and similar deals that have gone before it, Ben Godfrey, Jamal Lewis, James Maddison. At least they were getting significant sums, you know, comparative to the size of the football club and their finances, that they could then reinvest. Whereas with Pukki, it's not the same situation, and it almost feels like a lose-lose, apart from for Pukki, who obviously would satisfy that ambition in his career. And you can understand that. He's 32. It could be that in 2 years his legs are gone. You look at the steep decline of somebody like Grant Holt, who is a club legend at Norwich, consistently scored goals and then went to Wigan and struggled to make an impact in the Championship. So you know how quickly things can tail off, and it could be that if he doesn't get a move this summer, he'll never play in the top flight again, even. So you can understand it, but I can't see where Norwich, just from a purely business and footballing point of view, would benefit from this.
No, and then you have to weigh it up again against what promotion to the Premier League is worth, and 8 million compared to promotion to the Premier League, which obviously their chances of that, I think everyone would agree, is significantly enhanced with Timu Pukki leading their strike force. And as you mentioned, the goals that he almost guarantees, that again, you're essentially slashing your chances in half. You're slashing your chances of Premier League promotion as well, and the asset that he is to Norwich City makes him pretty, I would imagine, unattainable for a lot of clubs, and where they would be willing to pay for a 32-year-old, albeit one who has scored more than 20 goals in his last two seasons at Premier League level, which is more, for example, than Neil Maupay has done in both of the seasons that they've been in the Premier League at the same time. And we know the fee that he commanded because of his age. And the other element to this, pad, is Timu Pukki's contractual situation, which everyone will know. He was out of contract this summer. Norwich triggered the club option that they have on his Premier League money, so at a significant cost for them by Championship standards as well. But there is this element where if he has communicated to the club that he wishes to go and explore other opportunities, particularly in the Premier League. He has 1 year left on his contract. He could realistically, come January, then be open to looking at a pre-contractual agreement with clubs overseas. He, of course, then in 12 months, is able to go and sign for anyone that he likes. I guess a lot of that may come down to what Norwich's position looks like. But as we understand it, there haven't been talks over a new deal at this stage, certainly not formally, and certainly not to a point where there's been an offer put on the table from Norwich City. So there is maybe an argument of, well, do you cash in the asset that you have, or actually do you take the gamble, as we said, knowing how big he is to the squad and what he could mean for their promotion chances next season? Do you take that gamble knowing that you could then lose that asset on a free next summer and take the hit? It's a difficult one to weigh up, because there's a financial and business maybe perspective that says it's pragmatic and sensible to then cash in on the asset. But from a sporting perspective, it probably doesn't make much sense. And if you're Dean Smith, you certainly want Timu Pukki leading your line next season. So this adds another facet into what makes Timu Pukki's situation so interesting and probably so unique away from the other assets that Norwich City have at the club at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take your point on board about the financial aspect of cashing in now, but that's a false economy, because you get 8 million, we'll say, now, this summer. You've dramatically weakened your ability to score goals in the Championship. You don't get out of the league. Then where's your revenue coming from there? Whereas you keep him in the ranks, he stays clear of injury, and his powers don't wane dramatically over the next period, 9 months or so. And there's a far, far better chance that Norwich are back in the Premier League. And as a result, the Premier League revenue tap is turned fully on again. So I think it's black and white. It's absolutely cut and shut. You cannot afford, if you're Norwich City, to let Timu Pukki walk out the door. And if that meant he stayed for one more season, which is the period of his current contract now, the option that's been extended, and he left for zero next summer, well, hello, they got him for zero. They got him for a free transfer. It'll have given them the levels of service per transfer fee, i.e. zero, unrivaled. There won't be another Norwich player in the history of this football club who was repaid more beyond the realms of whatever Norwich paid for them initially. And in his case, as I say, don't want to keep labouring the point, but a free transfer. So if he went for a free transfer, so be it. If, you know, even with him in the ranks, it hasn't been quite good enough to get back to the Premier League. And then he can go off and explore whatever he wants to explore. But right here, right now, Norwich have to put Norwich first, I'm afraid. They have to be very pragmatic. And what makes me think that they could do that and not have a scenario where the individual's toys went out of the pram, he didn't want to be here, he made it quite clear he didn't want to be here, and he downed tools. That's not going to happen with Timu Pukki. There's no way on earth. And you know, the chat I've had with the Finnish journalist, the quotes themselves from his agent, indicate that this is a guy who will honour his contract, and that he isn't motivated by money in that regard, and he does have values, and he does, you know, he is a family man, and for those reasons, I'd really, yes, of course, he'd be unhappy if this summer comes and goes, and he's not afforded the opportunity to go back to the Premier League, particularly as we can understand there is interest there. So yes, he's not going to be happy, but by no manner of means do I think then that you would see him, you know, adopt maybe some of the behaviours we could associate with a certain Argentinian who used to form a deadly double act with him. And maybe one other person I'm thinking of as well, but I won't name him. But so for me, if that's the case, and you know that this player, while unhappy, would stay firmly on side and would give everything still in a Norwich shirt for the remaining 12 months of his contract, you keep him, because there's no financial consideration. And we've not even got into how on earth do you placate a fan base who in many regards are very frustrated and unhappy at what happened last year. And then they see for the second summer running, their best player, they're walking out the door. And let's be honest, for the money they get, not adequately replaced puts an awful lot of stress then on a Josh Sargent or an Adam Eder, irrespective of who else they brought in, which they'd have to do, to weigh in with the goals. And let's be honest, Smith, Shakespeare, Weber, those players, they don't need any more, you know, angst amongst the fan base, because they're going to be carrying enough of it as it is going into this season. If they don't start well, it'll be there again because it's just under the surface. So, you know, once you factor in that, on top of the financial element, on top of the what it would do to their bid to come back at the first attempt, for me, it's case closed. There shouldn't be any consideration from Norwich City's point of view this summer to depart Teemu Pukki back to the Premier League. That just makes no footballing or financial sense for me. Yes, of course, there's the player's wishes. But as I say, to repeat what we know of him and what both his agent and the journalist who's broken the story has said to me, you won't have a situation on your hands where Dean Smith is a stick of dynamite he's trying to deal with in the dressing room. That just wouldn't happen with Teemu Pukki.
No, absolutely not. And I suppose, I mean, you've mentioned the perspective of the fans as well, but it's also the perspective of those in the dressing room with Teemu Pukki, because if you're turning up to Colney one day and you're thinking, right, OK, we're putting a squad together for a championship push, what, we've just sold Teemu Pukki? Why have we done that? That's not a club that is going for championship promotion, is it? So I think all of these things you have to consider. And of course, in the background as well, there is the chance that he could potentially overtake Ewan Roberts. He could join or become only the fourth player to score 100 goals for Norwich City. How important that is to him, only he would be able to answer. But it's still a massive landmark in terms of the club. If he scores over 22 goals, I think, next season, he will reach that feat. That's pretty staggering that there's even a chance for him to do that, let alone if he actually went and did it. So all of that probably makes a summer exit unlikely for Teemu Pukki. And to be fair, his agent in his quotes probably outlines the reasons why that is as well, with quite a stinging analysis of Norwich City's recent recruitment in there for good measure as well. But the hope is that he will look behind him on the opening day of the championship season. There will be more creativity. There will be a better supply line. And hopefully that is enough, coupled with what you've said there about his character and personality, for him to be content to give his all for the next season for Norwich City, which is ultimately what they're going to need in the championship. Pad, I'll probably throw it back over to you really to introduce this chat with the Finnish journalist that we've managed to get. You can watch the full video on our channels once this podcast is up. If you go to our YouTube page, you'll be able to watch it in full unedited form. We're going to play a clip of it for you now. But Pad, I'll throw it over to you to introduce him and talk a little bit about the chat that you had with him as well.
Yeah, I mean, basically the guy's name is Via Vaiko Valta. I know that because he gave me a pronunciation lesson at the start.
That's also why I threw it over to you, so I didn't have to say his name.
I thought it was, Connor, yeah. It's not just numbers you struggle with, is it? It's languages as well, clearly. But he is, as you've already teed up initially, the journalist for the Finnish TV station, he said, although they have a few other multimedia outlets. But essentially, they're known in Finland as one of the main broadcasters. He's spoken directly to Timu's representative. Again, we'll repeat the name, Teemu Turunen. And we've digested the quotes, but that interview is, there's a little bit more background in there, and maybe you get a sense of how the Pukki camp, for want of a better label, feel about it, and why they have reached the position they have, why Teemu has, but also, you know, a bit more detail into, you know, why they don't think it will probably happen because of the reasons we've discussed in detail, and, you know, some nice stuff about, you know, why what is the motivation for Teemu, and what if, as I portrayed to via the scenario that it doesn't happen for him and that he stays here, and again we've touched on that, but to hear it from the guy who's, as I say, spoken to Teemu's representative, very enlightening, and just embellishes or adds another layer of context to those quotes, which we've obviously put out there on the Picnic channels, and we've spent the best part of the first 20-odd minutes of this podcast digesting. So well worth going and having a listen, and a watch any of our Pinkham video channels. You'll find that now.
And here's a little taster for you on this week's podcast as well.
Delighted to say I'm joined by Via from Finnish TV station. I'll just make sure I get the pronunciation right. MTV Sports. And Via is going to talk to us because it's his story that's breaking over here in the UK just before Tuesday lunchtime regarding a very well-known footballer for Norwich City, Teemu Pukki, and potentially some news around where his future lies. So I'll get Villa to sort of talk us through the story. But just to recap, as we all know from a Norwich perspective, Teemu Pukki, 12-month extension was taken up by the football club at the start of the summer. So he's technically contracted to Norwich until the summer of 2023. But there's a suggestion from, you know, people close to him in his camp that maybe Teemu feels that the time might be right this summer as opposed to 2023. So, Villa, just you've spoken to Timu's agent, haven't you? So I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah, I spoke to him and he was pretty straightforward with everything. So the thing is, they feel like it's a right moment to, well, not necessarily right moment to leave Norwich, but they feel like Teemu is at a certain level, which is required in the Premier League, and they feel like he's a Premier League player, and that's why it might be best to, you know, depart Norwich.
I mean, in terms of having spoken to his agent, I mean, have they communicated that to Norwich? Did he let you know that? Have they more or less suggested that he would seize his future elsewhere this summer?
Yeah, they've been having talks with Norwich, and from what I understand, directly with Stuart Webber, they've been talking about the club letting Teemu potentially leave to another club. Of course, there's going to be some sort of transfer fee involved, of course. But he described that the talks are ongoing the talks are still ongoing.
We live Norwich City,
the builder,
the passion.
The drama.
The last minute winners.
The debate.
That's why we've created Pink and Plus. Pink and Plus.
The app that takes you beyond the headlines.
With exclusive columns, blogs, podcasts and videos, we've got you covered.
Subscribe today. Pink and Plus. Stay ahead of the game.
Download now on the App Store and on Google Play.
There we go. Hopefully that's the last time we're talking about Teemu Pukki from a transfer speculation angle. Hopefully he comes up regularly in podcasts over the summer because he's scoring goals in various locations in Europe, be it Germany, France, Scotland, Cambridge, King's Lynn. Probably not at Dereham though, I hasten to add, due to his international commitments and his well-earned rest that he's probably having at the moment in Kosovo, it looks like, at a wedding, which he looked like he enjoyed that, didn't he, from the various videos that have been circulating around social media. But gents, if we move on then and talk a little bit about the fixtures, you guys were obviously covering it on the day I was making my way up to Headingley to watch England's test against New Zealand. They're already 2-0 up, so that was quite interesting. I saw a very bizarre wicket, but I, by the looks of your guys' faces, you're not particularly interested in that, so I won't run you through it. But Sam, Cardiff away, we reported that it was likely to be an away game because of obviously the work that's going on at Carrow Road, coupled with obviously the Pride stuff that is happening that weekend. It's a long trip, actually the first 6 away games, which beyond Birmingham, although that's in midweek, so you have to put that caveat on it. There's we're probably going to have to fill the car up for quite a few long trips.
Yeah, and I'll take pride in calling it to start off with. I did say, I think, on this podcast, but I did say I expected that to be the case. Cardiff or Swansea, I said, so, you know, 1-2, and I got it there. But yeah, other than that, not really too many reasons to be optimistic about it off the pitch. Obviously, we've got a lot of travelling ahead of us. I'm sure Paddy's not too disappointed to be missing out on that one. But on the pitch, I think Norwich fans will be quite pleased with that. Cardiff, I think, have been quite active in the transfer market, so that suggests they may be slightly different to last season, but based on recent evidence in terms of their performance in the Championship, with all due respect, you wouldn't really expect them to be in and around the areas of the table that Norwich are hoping to be next season. So I think on paper, it looks like a relatively good start on the pitch for Norwich. A lot of hard work, as I said, for Norwich fans and for travelling Norwich fans in those early parts. But I think Cardiff is a good sort of middle of the road start on the pitch and probably a good measuring stick for where the Championship is. There's been a lot of talk this summer since relegation, really, about the strength of the Championship and the widening gap between the first and second tiers. And I think Cardiff, a team that have traditionally over the last few years been in the sort of mid-table area, are going to offer a good example and a good way of assessing what the Championship is like at this stage. I think it's a decent start for Norwich, but also not a walk in the park by Championship standards. And yeah, I think they'll be happy with that.
I've got an image in front of me that actually kind of paints out the fixtures based on among the six strongest teams, amongst the seven weakest, based on kind of the bookmakers' odds. And actually, you look along that, how much sort of you want to read into this, I suppose, is up to you, really. Ultimately, I mean, for me, it's a bit, you play everyone twice, home and away. It's just what order it comes in. But actually, you look at that, and Norwich seem to have a relatively kind start, and there doesn't seem to be any particular run of time where they're facing any of those who are ranked as the six kind of favourites for the division at any one point. There's September, for example, where they play two in three games. But beyond that, again, in October, the same, really, two in three games. But there's no real headache runs where you look at Watford, who start with their opening three games, actually, against teams who are in that bracket. So you look at that, Pad, and you think, actually, if you're to analyse the fixture list, so to speak, you'd probably say, from a Norwich perspective, the start is relatively kind, but also there's a nice spread in terms of when they play those teams who may be their promotional rivals this season, albeit with kind of the caveat that this is the Championship. And of course, there's always one who emerges that perhaps nobody expects, or a team that is slightly stronger than people expect as well. Plus, we don't know where Norwich City are exactly going to be ranking. But to take it purely on the graphic that I have in front of me, it does look like a relatively even, well spread out fixture list from Norwich City's perspective.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. In terms of long hauls, again, I don't know why we constantly come back to the amount of miles we have to do, but there was only, I think I looked pre-Christmas, and there was only Reading that was a long, long haul midweek. But as much as we have to do the travel, it's the same for Dean Smith and his players. So, you know, I'm sure they'll be very happy that they're not going to be, you know, obviously you go to Cardiff on a Saturday, but it's a slightly different weekend than it is a midweek. So it does look fairly generous, if I'm honest. I'm not really, yeah, for those reasons, Connor. I mean, who at this stage last season would have said Luton and Huddersfield would be in the playoffs and they would be teams you'd have to catch? So I'm not really one for kind of breaking it down into a bracket of tough teams, middle table ones and the lower end ones. It looks the sort of fixture list where Norwich, if they could get a bit of momentum going, they'd fancy their chances. I mean, having said that, I'm going to contradict myself because I've looked at Christmas and can Luton replicate what they did last season? I think that'll be very tough. So to go to Luton Boxing Day and then have Reading reverse fixture at Carrow Road and, okay, Watford New Year's Day, but, you know, that wouldn't scare me. And even the run-in, saw Alex Neil, formerly of the Parish, talking about so many different scenarios could be in play for Sunderland over the run-in, which is why he places such an emphasis on where, by looking at those fixtures, you like to think there's not quite as many scenarios for Norwich in terms of a negative aspect, or otherwise the season really has gone in a downward spiral. But, you know, QPR, Russell Martin, Swansea, if it's still Russell Martin, West Brom away, that could be a tough one. And then Blackpool to finish. Well, you know, again, it'd be nice to think that Blackpool game on the 6th of May there's a bit of a promotion vibe to that. But yeah, ultimately, rather than me wanting to sort of focus too much on specific teams or clumps of fixtures or times of the year, I've said it a few times now, it doesn't look for me a stronger Championship is the one they exited 2 years ago, or maybe even last year. I think the three best teams definitely went out of the division in Fulham, Bournemouth and Forest. They were the three best teams for me. And I look at that league now and I don't see, you know, the company factor at Burnley. They've made a few signings. The boys Twine has gone in there, hasn't he? that will probably ensure they're at the right end of the table. I think Wilder at Borough, you'd be a fool to discount him and that club. So there's two there I'd pick out. But other than that, I'm not seeing anything that should really scare Norwich if Norwich can put their own house in order. I think it's a very, very amenable championship division this season coming. And Norwich, with a fair wind, with the group of players they've got that they'd hopefully add to either this window in January, and Smith, the coach who built teams at Brentford and Villa, then, you know, you'd have to be disappointed if Norwich aren't in the thick of it at the right end of the table.
Yeah, and the bookmakers agree with you because at this early stage, Norwich City are favourites to win the championship title at this stage, which is maybe based on what's happened historically in the last two times that they've been in that division. Of course, a lot of the squad is still there, important pillars of the squad as well. But Sam, I mean, it is going to be fascinating because it does feel like, particularly this time and with the context of last season and how rapidly Carrow Road was emptying and the general mood around the place, that a fast start is really important for Norwich City. It hasn't necessarily felt like that in the last two seasons that they've had at this level, where they have started slowly traditionally, and that was under a different head coach and with largely a different set of players as well, or some different players as well. But it does feel like this time, both for Dean Smith, and obviously a lot of the feelings that Norwich City have towards him at the moment are based on a campaign that, okay, a lot of people are saying probably wasn't solely responsible to him. But by the same token, the only memories they have with him at the moment are negative ones, ultimately. So in order to shift that narrative, the only way you do that is by winning games, with the pressure on the squad, on the club, on certain members within the club. It does feel like the first six games, and probably marking their card in those six games, it does feel really important, not just for how the season might pan out, but also for the general mood around the place and the pressure around the place as well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. As you highlighted, they've struggled with slow starts the last couple of times, and I don't think they can really afford to do that. Part of me wonders if that was behind the pre-season, which, you know, with all due respect to the teams that they're playing, isn't necessarily uber difficult to start off with. Obviously, they've got that trip to Aldis Park to play Dereham, and then I think when they go to Germany, it's Jan Regensburg, a Zweite Bundesliga side, which is the second division, and they're sort of mid-table in that league as well. Then they come back, play, I believe it's Kings Lynn after that. Cambridge mixed in there as well, although I think that's after Marseille. When you round it all up, there's probably only Marseille and Celtic that are similar to, well, I think Marseille are obviously above championship level, but they've not got too many championship level teams to play against. And I think that might be to do with the confidence element and the momentum element that's been lacking for at least a year now since they won that championship title. So yeah, I think Dean Smith is probably wary of that. I'm sure the sort of PR team at Norwich are wary of that as well, in terms of the sorts of reactions they've been getting for things recently, and they'll be aware of the mood. And as we all know, the best way to turn around a mood in a football club is to start winning games. So I think they have a start which definitely gives them the opportunity to do that without being, you know, easy, or the first six fixtures you'd pick. It's definitely could be a lot harder, and I think it gives them an opportunity. So hopefully they can sort of kick on in pre-season, and Dean Smith can be ready to go by the start of the season. I mean, the worrying element is that if you look at the last two slow starts that they've had, arguably they would have been the two seasons, if you include this one, out of the three, that you would have expected to start best. I mean, the last two times they didn't have a new manager that was still figuring out the squad. They weren't coming off a 22-point miserable relegation, although obviously last time that was that 21-point relegation. I think it felt slightly better at that time, and probably the atmosphere around the club was better, and the players at the club at that time, in my opinion, were better. So, you know, it's not exactly the ideal situation, but you do wonder if that was anything to do with Daniel Farke's sort of methods. Obviously, we know how hard he likes to work the players, and given the traditional values of pre-season and how people see that, maybe that had an impact. So, yeah, I think that's key. But I think, importantly, the signs we're getting is that everybody knows at the football club that it's key. So they've sort of wired things to be aware of that and to go into it being aware of that, and hopefully they can sort of channel that in the best way.
Absolutely. A couple of kind of other points, I suppose, to raise before we look ahead to Friday's game. The kit will be released on Thursday, not on not today or Tuesday at 9 o'clock, where the club did a very good video actually on mental health awareness in association with Mind that was narrated by Stephen Fry. I don't know where they got that idea from, but it was very good, well produced, and I know that they've kind of had a lot of criticism for some of their output on their various channels. This was exceptional, I thought, and really captured the message of the campaign that they're trying to launch very nicely. On the kit, it will be yellow and green. If it's not pinstripes, I'm not interested. Let's move on. Pad, Oldest Park, that's the first destination for Norwich City on what is a fairly hefty pre-season in terms of mileage. I mean, we've spoken about get the violins out again. We've spoken about mileage already on this podcast a few times, but it involves three different countries. Is it four, I suppose, if you count our own? A lot of travelling in that as well. It all starts at Oldest Park on Friday. We're going to hear from Dereham Town's manager Adam Gustafson in a moment. I had a chat with him earlier on. That's an interesting segment from their perspective. But from Norwich's angle, what will they be looking to extract from this friendly against Dereham Town? Is probably fitness ultimately, isn't it, in the first one, but probably that they will want some of what Sam has spoken about there. You want to see a little bit maybe of Smith's tactical ideas, as well as probably a win ultimately that will maybe help cheer everyone up a little bit after a dismal Premier League campaign.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more I'd like to see an Omar Bamadeli or an Ida on the park looking fit, looking fresh. Even Josh Sargent, you know, players who missed out towards the end of last season, just to give it that sense that, you know, the dial can turn now, and that, you know, there is a collection of players still, you know, despite, you know, they'll now have that label relegated Premier League players, and they'll have to carry that, as Dean Smith said, you know, they're no longer Premier League players. They are Championship players, and they need to deal with that, the ones who are still going to be on board beyond September the 1st and the transfer window. But just a sense of renewal. That's what I'd like to see. I wouldn't pay too much heed to not even the result, but even the performance. I think it's very much this level of preset at this stage against this level of opposition, really about fitness. And this is incorporated into, I'm sure, as they would have done every other pre-season, they'll probably be training on Friday. You know, they'll probably be doing a session or two before they even get to all this. So, you know, you'll see huge amounts of rotation in terms of minutes on the pitch. So really, it's just, for me, it's more the visual sight of some young talent. And you could even throw the Rose and Springitz into that, maybe even a Kamara, we might see him, Tompkinson, these lads, Flynn Clark, that'd be one I'd like to have a look at as well. You know, there's a lot of talk about him and, you know, some of the abilities he could bring to a midfield, which was patently lacking in certain areas last season. The sight of those type of players, because that would give us an insight into Dean Smith's thinking, really. You know, the group he has at Dereham, you would think, are probably the ones where he feels are going to be part of the journey moving forward. You know, we did a Q&A earlier in the week, myself and Samuel, and it would appear Josh Martin is training with the 23s. That doesn't suggest that he's in Dean's thinking moving forward, and possibly, If you role play that one out, probably means he's going to be off and out somewhere else and out the door. So, yeah, for me, it's which personnel and the ones who you think can renew and refresh what felt like a very tired and jaded squad towards the end of last season. That's what I'm most looking for from a trip to Dereham, I think.
Absolutely, it's obviously a big occasion for Dereham. They've had a difficult summer, which again, Adam will get into when I play our chat in just a moment time. But just for those hoping to get down, it's cash only, pay at the gate, £5 for adults and £5 for under 16s as well. If you want to come along to Oldest Park to watch that friendly on Friday, there's also obviously people who are hoping to come by car. It's not the biggest car park in the world, so if you want to get a car parking space, come early, essentially, and there's no additional cost for that as well. So that's hopefully all the details if you're hoping to come down on Friday. Sam, just to kind of throw it over to you then before we hear from Dereham Town's manager. From a Norwich City perspective, the start of pre-season, as Pad said, is often about fitness. You get various kind of tiers of pre-season. I think you get the start of it, which is very fitness based, the middle of it, which is about getting enough minutes into different players' legs at different times, and also maybe some players beginning to show performances and reasons why they should perhaps be involved, and then the end of pre-season, where we probably get a real look at what Dean Smith is thinking ahead of Cardiff, as it will be, which will probably be the when we head up to Scotland. And I think that's a trip that we're probably all really looking forward to. So in terms of this one and this kind of first phase of pre-season, it's going to be, as we've said, probably a different Norwich squad in terms of we're not going to see Timu Pukki at Aldous Park. We're not going to see Tim Krul. We're not going to see Danel Sanani. We're not going to see all of those players who've been on international duty. We might not see Isaac Hayden as well. So it does feel like there's probably an opportunity for, particularly if you look at those young players, an opportunity for them to get their noses ahead in terms of the competition before those players come back. I'm thinking of someone like John Rowe, who didn't get a start in the Premier League. A really good start, middle and end to pre-season, probably puts him firmly in Dean Smith's thoughts, obviously ahead of some players who are probably going to come back and be assessed. So it's opportunity knocks for a lot of Norwich City players.
Yeah, and look no further than the impact Todd Cantwell made in pre-season of 2019. It wasn't really anywhere close to the starting 11 when that started, obviously. Had just sort of come through the academy and started making first team appearances here and there in that 18-19 championship winning season. And Ono Hernandez was far ahead of him in the pecking order. Cantwell has an excellent pre-season, really impresses Daniel Farker, works hard physically. I believe at that time he'd come back in a much greater state than he was when they left at the end of the season as well. Forced his way into Daniel Farker's thinking, and then he's starting at Anfield on the first day of the season. So shows you what sort of impact a positive pre-season can have, especially for a young player who maybe has a point to prove to a manager or has certain areas of the game which the manager has said they need to improve. You know, we don't know yet what sort of work the likes of John Rowe, Tony Springett have been doing this summer, but I imagine there'll be certain things, given how sort of ruthlessly in such detail they look at how players can improve. I'm sure they know exactly what they can get better at, and it's been, you know, it's their prerogative to go away and get better at that. So I'm looking forward to seeing if there's any noticeable changes in the play of players like that. Equally, sort of the more established young players like Andrew Omabamadele or Adam Eder, who have had a lot of time, you know, on the physio's table to think about how to improve themselves and how they can force themselves into Dean Smith's starting 11 come the start of the season. I think Adam Eder is actually probably pretty similar to that Todd Cantwell example, if you look at their sort of stature in the team and in the pecking order for starting. So I'm looking forward to seeing what sorts of improvements we have there. But like you say, with the established players away, having extended breaks because of that time with international sides, it does give them a few weeks to really impress Dean Smith and get a head start. I think that's probably an area where Stuart Webber might be looking to save a little bit of money. And I think in his interview for club media at the end of the season, when he did that sort of assessment, there was a little section where he was talking about the players that maybe might feel slightly like new signings this summer. And it's down to them, the likes of not only the really young players, but the likes of Sam McCallum, who have been out on loan. They've got head starts, and I'm sure they'll be you know, looking to get ahead. As you sort of suggested, there are different stages of pre-season, and I don't think Dean Smith's going to be basing too much on how good a player looks against Dereham Town. But, you know, I think the hard work will be what impresses him in the early stages of the pre-season. If they can put that in, they probably get the chances to show their technical quality against the likes of Marseille, Celtic, Hibernian, and it will be based on those performances that Dean Smith will pick his 11 for the start of the season. So yeah, lots of opportunity, and I'm looking forward to seeing who sort of grasps those.
Absolutely right. Well, here's a chat with Adam Gustafsson, first team manager at Dereham Town. He sort of lets us know what he's expecting from the game on Friday as well, but also how big an opportunity this is for their football club to have Norwich City rolling into town on Friday night. Delighted to be joined by Adam Gustafsson, Dereham Town's first team manager. Gus, how are you preparing for this game on Friday? It's obviously an interesting one because it's a pre-season friendly, but even though it's a pre-season friendly, it's one against Norwich City, and that name coming to Aldous Park and coming into town, I suppose, for you guys is absolutely massive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a fantastic fixture for us. There's no two ways about that, and one that we're very much looking forward to. Great opportunity for the players to obviously play against professional players and pit their wits against those sorts of players. So really good for them and really exciting for them. And yeah, for us, we know it's going to be a tough night. We know it's going to be a really difficult game, of course, and it will be a game where we're not going to see much of the ball, and it's going to be tough. You know, we are going to suffer, I'm sure, in large portions of it. But like I say, it's a great opportunity for us to welcome a professional football club and Norwich to Aldous Park, and we're as a club very much looking forward to it.
And whenever these friendlies take place, there's always a lot of kind of talk about what the professional outfit will get from it, and it's usually viewed as a little bit of a fitness exercise for those teams. But from your perspective, what are you kind of, obviously the club will be looking at it for as a revenue driver ultimately, and getting people through the gates and experiencing Aldous Park, but from a purely footballing perspective, what will you be looking at as a manager of obviously also a team preparing to take on a season, and obviously a new season for you guys as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to take it a little bit for what it is. I don't think, we'll have many games that will probably shape up, throughout the season, that will shape up probably the way Friday will shape up. So we kind of have to understand that and understand it's obviously a complete different opposition in terms of quality that we'll not face again. But I think for us, it's that, organisation without the ball. I mean, that's going to be the big message in training this week, is just making sure that we've got organisation when we're not in possession, because we know that Friday is going to be a case of that, trying to deal with that as best we can, and really just the biggest thing is trying to look for our players to enjoy the occasion and really try and take the game as though it is a normal game and really try and do the things that they would ordinarily do, if that makes sense, when they're in possession. And I think we've just got to try and be like that and like I say, really enjoy the occasion. But yeah, I think for us it will just be shape without the ball, trying to be as organised and as difficult to break down as we can be. That is often an attitude and concentration thing, as well as obviously fitness that comes into that. So I think, they're the things that we'll try and take out of it. It probably is back to front for us. You'd probably want to build into playing Norwich at the back end of a pre-season programme for a team like us. And of course, Norwich will look at it in the right way. They start with a team like us and then they build into their pre-season programme. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be, like I say, we're going to suffer a little bit on Friday. There's no two ways about that. But go back to it, and as you said just then, it's a great evening for the club, and hopefully we can capitalise with getting a good few people through the gate, and it gives us a nice start in that sense to the season ahead, really.
Yeah, you've played in a few of these games as a player, some of them for Durham Town. What are they like when you face Norwich City in a pre-season friendly as a player? Is it just about, as you said there, enjoying the experience of it? Can you take stuff from it as a player as well? What's been kind of your experience of this fixture in the past?
Yeah, I think from our side of things, as a player, you're in a bit of a no-lose situation, because if you're playing up against a centre-forward who plays for Norwich City, as a first-team player, you're not expected to be able to defend them. If they get the better of you, that's what's expected, and the same for all over the pitch. That is the expectation. So I think from the player's approach, it is really an opportunity to pick yourself firstly against the best players around, which is great. But secondly, you go into it with no fear, really, because, like I say, there's no, if you get skinned and roasted, as a fullback, well, that's what's expected to happen. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of one of those for our lads. I think that, and I'm hoping that's what, how they'll be on Friday. It's certainly not one to get nervous about or, be apprehensive that your opponent might get the better of you. It's certainly not a game where you need to be thinking like that. It's one where, go out and see how well you against professional footballers and go with that kind of no lose, nothing to lose attitude, which is exactly how we're hopefully going to be on Friday.
Absolutely, and I suppose on a wider kind of basis, it's there'll be people coming to Aldous Park who perhaps have never been before. There'll be people who perhaps have been in the past but maybe haven't been recently. How important is it for Durham Town to use this as an opportunity to advertise themselves and what they're going to be doing ahead of this season, which we'll get into maybe the mechanics of what that looks like, because it looks slightly different for you guys in a moment. But just as a purely
as an opportunity to introduce Dereham Town to some people and a Norfolk, local Norfolk football to people. You must view this as a massive opportunity for the football club to hopefully get a few more people through the gate in the long term.
Exactly that, yeah, exactly that. You're right, there'll be people that that will come to the game that won't be, you know, regular attendees of our games, and some, as you probably rightly say, that have never even been there before. So I think for us it's important that we put on an experience for everyone that's there, and that's, you know, simple, just simple little things like making sure people can get a drink nice and easily, you know, people feeling warmth as they come into the ground, and, you know, just getting a good feel factor from the football club and what it's about. Because you're right, they'll you know, and I always think with these sorts of fixtures, there'll be Norwich fans that are local that will follow Norwich and particularly probably be season ticket holders and go to home games, but when Norwich are away, they might not, you know, go to those games, or, you know, if there's games on Sunday, you know, things like that, which certainly when they weren't, probably would have been a case a lot more. But, you know, those sorts of scenarios, and people love watching football. So it's just making sure that we line ourselves up as the next offering, if that makes sense, or do as much as we can to be that next offering for those sorts of fans. Because, you know, we've seen it before, you know, our attendances, if Norwich are at home at, you know, 3 o'clock on a Saturday, are probably 30 to 40 less than what they usually be. So there is the appetite there from Norwich fans to come and watch the local side when they can. So, you know, that's what we've got to try and focus on. And it's just about making it a nice welcoming place for those fans to come. And hopefully we do that on Friday. Obviously on the pitch, you know, hopefully we give a good account of ourselves and show that we're a decent side and we play at a decent level, which we do. And you know, that might entice a few to sort of give us a look, as you rightly say, throughout the season. So, yeah, big night for the club, really. We've got to capitalise on it because these fixtures don't come round very often. And when they do, it's important that we maximise the potential from them.
Absolutely. And I mean, to delve into kind of your situation a little bit, because the club has had an interesting summer off the pitch. I mean, I'm obviously partially involved sometimes in terms of things off the pitch, and I try and help out where I can and have done for the last couple of years. But for people who maybe aren't as tuned into the club, they maybe won't be aware, but you guys were obviously in the Isthmian North Division last year, which was a league basically containing Essex football clubs, wasn't it? And because of the geography and mechanics of a few Norfolk teams gaining promotion and obviously Lowestoft getting relegated as well, that means geographically you've been pushed into a new league, which is kind of a Midlands division. So you've got a team from Norfolk playing in a Midlands League, which has obviously had kind of repercussions for you guys in terms of players maybe being unable to commit to the travelling or whatever. So, I mean, as a challenge, first and foremost, what has this summer been like? And are you now emerging from it, although it was maybe a little bit of a kick in the teeth initially, are you now emerging from it with a little bit more positivity about what the season could bring?
Yeah, I mean, it's been tough. It's been very tough. I'm not going to candy coat it any differently. It's been very challenging. We've lost a lot of players. I think the players we've lost from this, or from, you know, going into next season, is more than if you put all the players we've lost at the end of the season across managerial time in all of our clubs, wouldn't be as much, if that makes sense. So yeah, you know, it gives you an idea of how many players we've lost, and players that we wouldn't have lost had we not been moved leagues. I'm sure of that. But you know, it's like anything, isn't it? I think you have that period of when that happens, it's you know, a bit doom and gloom, and it's a bit difficult to see a positive resolution to it. Whereas I think we're kind of now, well, I don't think we are coming out of that side of it now, where we're looking ahead, we're looking at players coming in. You know, there's players that we've targeted, there's a good core, the ones we really want to keep as well, that's staying. And it's going to be a bit more of a youthful look about the side, but I don't think that's always a bad thing. So, you know, we're quite excited for what we can potentially get together and, or what we can pull together in terms of the squad for next season. And it will be very different, as you rightly say, to what we had last season. But, you know, ultimately, I don't always think that's the worst thing. And that's kind of where our mindset and belief is at the moment. But yeah, I mean, it has been, there's no choice about it. You know, it's just typical, you know, more local sides have come into the division, which we were in. It looked an appetising league for us in terms of local derbies, and there was less travelling. And, you know, we've always been the side that's had to travel because we've been the only side that stepped for a number of seasons. And then when there's a few more to join us, we get shafted out to a different league and have even more travelling. So it's we do feel a bit hard done by, I'm not going to lie. And we do feel we've been let down a little bit by the FA, really. I think for them to expect a club at our level to do that volume of travelling is difficult. But ultimately, football is Saturday's your football day, and if you're travelling 2 more hours, so be it, kind of thing. And I think that's kind of where we're at with it now. And I'm not to say we've got reason to be optimistic looking ahead to next season now, which is all we're focusing on.
Absolutely. Now, I know you're an Aston Villa fan, so the opportunity to be facing Dean Smith on Friday as a Villa fan, that must be quite nice for you.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, well, it's the same as like with the players as well. It's great for them to put their wits against, you know, professional players, and exactly the same for us and for me against, you know, a professional manager, in terms of, you know, we'll get something out of it watching what they do, and just, you know, understanding the patterns of play they have, and yeah, just we're going to get loads out of it from that side of things, really, just seeing what they do and how they set up and how they create things like overloads in the pitch, and yeah, just kind of really watching what they do. And I think for me that'll be a lot of what Friday is about, just seeing what we can possibly pinch from them. Obviously we're not going to replicate it fully at our level, but you know, there are definitely going to be some you know, real key bits that we'll see and think, blimey, that's great how they do that, and you know, that's fantastic. And you know, obviously he's done, in my opinion, a good job over time as a manager, and done well at Villa for sure, and I'm sure he'll do well with Norwich as well. I think, you know, I'm sure that there's every chance they'll come back up again. So yeah, looking forward to seeing him as well. But yeah, like I say, it should, all of that goes into what should be a good night for us, and yeah, we're all very much looking forward to it.
There we go, gents. I think that rounds off the pod. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for listening. We'll, of course, be at Oldest Park on Friday to bring you full coverage of Norwich City's friendly. The best place to go for that is the Pink and Plus app. What better time to subscribe than the start of a new season? Hopefully a more optimistic one as well. You can get a free trial now, pinkand.com, for all the details on that. There's a tab in the top left that says Pink and Plus. If you click on that, then all of the details are there for you. We will hopefully bring coverage of all, if not the majority of, Norwich City's pre-season friendlies, and plenty more insight behind the scenes as we head in there, well, firmly into the transfer window forest, I think, is what it could become in July and August. Thank you very much for listening. It begins again. Let's see how we get on. See you soon.